The Morning Show with Greg Berg is next.
Support for The Morning Show comes from Carthage College, where students can conduct NASA research, produce an original play, or join an in-house marketing agency as early as their freshman year. More information on all that Carthage offers is at carthage.edu. And we welcome you to the Tuesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Tomorrow, in movie theaters across the country, including Tinseltown in Kenosha, you have the opportunity to view a beautiful new documentary that has been created by Susan Fromke, titled Yannick, An Artist's Journey, a riveting portrait of the musical director of the Metropolitan Opera, Maestro Yannick Naizet-Séguin. This is actually the fourth major documentary film that Susan Fromke has created in collaboration with the Met. The first was a film called The Auditions, which took the viewer behind the scenes and showed much of the backstage drama of the 2007 Metropolitan Opera Auditions. Her second film, Wagner's Dream, examined in remarkable detail the massive and controversial and difficult production of Wagner's Ring Cycle by Robert Lepage. Most recently, she created a documentary film called The Opera House in honor of the 50th anniversary of the Metropolitan Opera's move to Lincoln Center and their current home. Susan Fromke's career as a documentarian actually began with work on what is regarded as one of the groundbreaking documentaries of all time, Grey Gardens, which examined in cinema verite style the peculiar life of two women, mother and daughter, both named Edith Beale, both cousins of Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis. Edith Beale and her daughter lived in near poverty and squalor in a once grand mansion in East Hampton, New York. Albert and David Maisel were responsible for creating this remarkable film, and it helped begin what has been a remarkable career for Susan Fromke. Her works have included a documentary called Recording the Producers, a musical romp with Mel Brooks. She also collaborated on Escape Fire, The Fight to Rescue American Healthcare. Again, this most recent film done in collaboration with the Met is titled Yannick, An Artist's Journey. At Tinseltown in Kenosha, it can be seen tomorrow, Wednesday afternoon, and also Wednesday evening. In my conversation with Susan Fromke, I asked her if anything in particular had galvanized her interest in becoming a filmmaker or documentarian.
Well, oddly enough, even though this is not a documentary film, when I first arrived in New York, I grew up in Tallahassee, Florida, and I always wanted to kind of live in New York and just have an exciting career, kind of, you know. That was kind of my generation. It was right at the beginning of Women's Lib. And so I had seen Gimme Shelter when I was in Florida and when I first moved to New York. And that's what kind of put the Maisel brothers' name on my radar. And then just by chance, I ended up doing kind of filling in for a secretary of theirs who was going on vacation to Switzerland. She broke her leg on that vacation, so I feel like this was karmic, you know, that the Maisels asked me to stay, and I stayed there for the next, for like the next 32 years, really.
Wow.
And so, you know, and as I said, the Maisels were really looking for people who would kind of embrace it. They didn't want to unteach people, put it that way. They didn't want people who had already been taught how to script a film and how you work from a script. You know, they wanted to kind of train people to see that you build, you structure the film from the footage you gather. You know, and there's a whole kind of understanding of, you know, how much you shoot and when you stop shooting. And so when do you have the film in the can? And just being able to really, it's more of a psychological approach of understanding people. And so I was so lucky because I was one of the few people that was kind of invited in at a very young age and was able to grow. And I will say that that's always been my approach to filmmaking, is as close to verite as you can get, even though nowadays it's very hard. You know, Grey Gardens was filmed over an intense period of 6 weeks. The Maisels' previous film, which is also kind of a landmark film, Salesman, also filmed intensely over a six-week period. It's very hard to do that. Well, for a while it was very hard to do that. I think it's actually a little easier now because the technology has changed so much. But that was, you know, that whole approach to as much, it's filming, finding a story that does have a verite component and trying to minimize how many interviews you have to do to kind of tell the story. You know, the Maisels approach is still very much something I embrace. And oddly enough, Peter Gelb, who's the general manager of the Met Opera, he also embraces that philosophy of filmmaking, because we met Peter in 1983. He walked into Maisels. He had seen one of the films we had made on The Artist Cristo called The Running Fence, about the big, beautiful running fence that had been installed in Northern California in the mid-70s. And he said, I'd like to have you make a film about Seiji Ozawa, shooting it in the same approach. He didn't even use the term cinema verite, but he just liked the approach. And then that started this relationship that I've had with Peter Gelb for the last 30-odd years in making films. And we really, even like with the Yannick film, you know, we try to film as much verite as we can and then supplement it with, you know, other material, archival primarily.
With really exciting results. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking today with documentarian Susan Fromke about the latest film she has made in collaboration with the Metropolitan Opera, a film called Yannick, An Artist's Journey, which is a portrait of the Met's artistic director, conductor Yannick Nézet-Séguin. Susan Fromke, describe what I assume was some sort of invitation that came to you from the Metropolitan Opera to make this film. What exactly were they looking for, and how specific was the invitation?
Well, I was actually up at the Met in 2010 working on the Wagner's Dream film, which was about Robert Lepage's very controversial Ring cycle that he was directing for the Met. And during that time, Yannick had his Met debut conducting Carmen. And I was lucky enough to go and see one of those performances. And, you know, Carmen is, certainly for me, it was music that I more or less grew up with. It was one of the few operas musically that I knew. And I felt that it was so exciting seeing this young conductor who was so physical in his conducting and his interpretation of this music. I really found it thrilling. And so I remember at some point talking to Peter Gelb and saying, oh, I found the whole production wonderful, and I really was fascinated by the conductor. And Peter said, well, we're really interested in having him do a lot more guest conducting here. And then, like 8 years later, it was announced that he would be the new music director of the Met Opera. And so Peter Gelb talked to me and he said, why don't we think about making a film about Yannick's first year at the Met? And so that was the initial idea, that we would really concentrate on just filming the first year as his, you know, as he began his music directorship. And we thought we would focus on the opera La Traviata, which is pretty well known and, to me, extraordinary music, Verdi's great music, and Poulenc's the dialogue of the Carmelites, which is also incredibly beautiful and very much more modern kind of sounding music. So we thought it would be nice to kind of follow him through the year, knowing that he wasn't going to be there all that much because he also is the conductor for the Philadelphia Orchestra, and he has an orchestra in Canada that he's still the music director of, the Orchestra Metropolitan in Montreal. So that was the initial concept. But, you know, whenever we go into these ideas, you really don't know the film you're going to make. You have an idea of what you're going to be focusing on initially, but then as you get into filming, you start to realize where else you can go in making the film. And what really appealed to me was, as the more I got to know Yannick, and I actually was able to meet his parents. His parents are always at every single performance at the Met that he conducts, and realized how kind of fascinating his childhood was. And so that led us to really, a lot of the film is kind of telling the story of how Yannick got to this point, how he became, you know, how his life evolved to eventually result in him becoming the music director of one of the biggest opera houses in the world.
Interesting. So in other words, this film, as it began, I mean, as you began work on this film, you envisioned it actually, in a sense, being really close to, for instance, your film Wagner's Dream, which chronicled the design and development and construction and eventually the opening of the Robert Lepage Ring Cycle production. So this would have been maybe a similar film following Yannick Nézet-Séguin through his first season as artistic director of the Met. And then you realized that would leave, in a sense, untold this other facet of his story that you found so compelling. And so what we have then, in a sense, is a much more complex and in some respects even richer film than it might otherwise have been. Not that that first plan couldn't have been really something extraordinary, but I find it interesting to think that this film ultimately became something very different than was what was initially conceived.
That was perfectly put. Yes, that's exactly right. And also, you know, what happened as well is that we made the Opera House in between the Wagner's Dream and Yannick, because that was the first film that I ever had experience working with archival footage. And that was the story of, the Met moving to Lincoln Center, in, as you said, in 1966. But it's also a very wonderful story. It follows the story of some of the opera singers, including Leontine Price. And so in telling that story of between the opera singers and the building of Lincoln Center on some level and the building of the Opera House, we delved into amazing archival footage. And it was the first time I'd done that, and I found it very satisfying in a way to be able to tell these backstories in a very visual way. And when, you know, one of the things that happened when we were making Yannick, of course, was the pandemic. So we were just starting the edit in March of 2020 when we had to all of a sudden stop working. You know, me and my editor, Peter Livingston, we had to stop working together in the edit room, and we had to quickly set up so that we could each work from home with hard drives and everything. I was just kind of working off of my laptop. He had a whole edit of, luckily, a high-end edit, the Avid kind of edit software and hardware at his apartment in the Upper West Side of Manhattan. So the thing is that even though we couldn't film anymore on the Yannick film, we were able to dig deep into the archival resources that were available to us, especially at the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, because they had been following Yannick since he had such an extraordinary kind of history as a teenager conducting that, you know, we were able to find that footage while we were quarantined, and that became a very big part of the story. Also, his parents were a big resource for material as well, because they systematically, if anything was ever filmed about Yannick, his mother would very politely ask if she could have a copy of it. So even though we didn't have the rights to use it, and we eventually had to get the rights and we had to make high-resolution versions of it, but we knew what we started to really realize we could tell the story of his childhood, which to me is it's really fascinating.
Absolutely. And it is an extraordinary treasure trove of archival materials that you're able to draw upon, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. This next matter that I'm going to ask you about, I do not want to dwell upon. I don't think it's the main point, but I do think it is worth asking about. Yannick Nezet-Séguin came to become artistic director of the Met, in a sense, under less than perfect circumstances, in that his rise to that position coincided with the fall of James Levine, who had, of course, been artistic director there for many, many years. This film is not about any of that. It focuses solely on Yannick Nezet-Séguin. And I'm just wondering if you have any thoughts about the fact that, in a sense, because the film focuses solely on him, you don't need to touch on any of the kind of difficult topics and painful circumstances under which he actually assumed leadership of the Met. If you had made, in a sense, a more standard kind of documentary film about this moment in his career, chances are we would have all kinds of talking heads offering all kinds of commentary on some of that. Can you just comment on making a film that, in a sense, did not need to go into any of those difficult places?
Well, I feel that, you know, we did reference it very, very early, just through news clips in the very beginning of the film, that Yannick was starting his appointment to the Met as music director in the vacancy, so to speak, that James Levine had left, you know. Right. And in all honesty, I really cannot make any comments on James Levine per the terms of the Met's legal agreement with his estate. But the I actually felt like that wasn't the film we were making. You know, we were really just focusing on Yannick's first year. We kind of limited it that way. You know, the other thing, too, is that even though I think that Yannick certainly revered, I call him Jimmy Levine, his biggest influence in the film, which we do delve into, was Giuliani, you know, Carlos Maria Giuliani. And there's a, you know, and so in a way it seemed like, if, you know, we didn't want to, I felt like that just, you know, that in many ways the story of what happened with Mr. Levine, it wasn't really that necessary.
Exactly.
To
be clear, I quite agree. It is not as though their two careers were significantly intertwined in any way. And in a sense, the ending of the one chapter and the beginning of the new, it's really two separate stories. And I have to say, it was with actually some sense of relief in watching the film that the film did not include really overt references to that part of the story. In a sense, this is a portrait of the new music director, and I think that is as it should be. And I should think for you, on some level, it must have been a relief also that was the film you were charged with making and not a film that would have tried to kind of tell the whole difficult story. I think that's probably a film that would, in a sense, not have been nearly as fun to make.
I would agree. I mean, I certainly knew Maestro Levine pretty well, actually, over the years. And, you know, I mean, also, when you were up at the Met, you, especially during, you know, making the Wagner's Dream, you saw how his health was deteriorating. So there was that aspect to the story. There was the scandal, you know. So I'm really glad that we didn't have to delve into any of that.
For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with documentarian Susan Fromke about her newest film for the Metropolitan Opera, a film called Yannick, An Artist's Journey. It is a beautifully crafted portrait of the Met's new artistic director, Yannick Nezet-Séguin. describe to us, if you would, the first time you met Maestro Nezé-Séguin in any kind of significant way. I don't mean a passing meeting, but the first time you actually sat down with him for any length of time, and what you recall is your initial impressions of this extraordinary musician.
Well, the one thing that the first time I really met him was when we were filming La Traviata. And what, you know, I also made, it's funny to say this, I had also made a film years earlier in like 1987 on Herbert von Karajan, who was the very famous conductor in Germany and Austria of the Berlin Philharmonic. And, you know, he was very intimidating. You know, Maestro von Karajan, you would call him Maestro, you would kind of almost have to bow to him. You know, I mean, he had, you know, it was very different. With Yannick, he's so open. He just welcomes you. There's a sense of joy that he has. And, you know, he's excited about everything. So he was excited about being filmed. And he wanted to give us as much access as he could. So it was, I felt very welcomed by him. And, you know, he wasn't in any way intimidated by the camera. I think that's because he's been filmed so often in his lifetime, you know, from the time he was 18 on, so to speak, conducting. And so he gave us a lot of access. It's not like we were able to kind of get embedded with him, but as long as he was at the Met, and these were some of his earliest days there when he was just even starting to just, you know, move into his office there and things like that. So he was very welcoming, and it was really fascinating to see the detail of, you know, the way he works with the singers. One of the first scenes that was filmed was with the soprano Diana Damaro, where they're working on one of Violetta's arias and in La Traviata. And it's such a beautiful sequence of, first of all, their energy, the detail of perfection they're going for, the understanding of what every note means. I mean, all of that is so much a part of who Yannick is really trying to get, you know, as he says, that his interpretation is really to really serve the score and to really understand what the score is saying. And, you know, this comes from countless hours of studying that he still does to this day. So, I mean, not only is he welcoming, but I thought he was, you know, he's got a style of working with people that's so kind of, he kind of appreciates their talent in such a way that it brings out even more of their talent. So it was kind of a wonderful experience right from the get-go.
Right. Well, and just to contrast him with, for instance, a venerable master like Herbert von Karajan, I mean, one does not think of Herbert von Karajan as working with artists in at all the same way. I mean, in that, with the case of someone like a von Karajan, this is a master from the mountaintop bestowing his great insights onto the musicians huddled around him. It is not at all the same sort of sense of artistic equals, artistic comrades or colleagues working together in the way that Yannick Zézé-Séguin works with, for instance, great singers like Diana Damaro.
That's exactly right. Equality. It's there's a respect and, you know, there's a sense of equality between the, whether it's the singer or the orchestra member and the conductor, that, you know, in one of the Karajan scenes where he's working with, you know, one of the greatest orchestras in the world, the Vienna Philharmonic, and he's scolding them about the way they're ending one of Wagner's operas, and it treats them like they're schoolboys. You know, it's a very different working pattern, modus operandi.
In that sequence where he's working with Diana Damaro, he says something that I think speaks to his mindset. We hear him saying that something to the effect that we're merely luggage in transition. We are custodians of something much bigger than us. And what he's saying there is the Met is much bigger than he is. And for that matter, opera itself is much bigger than he is, and he is just a custodian for a time of a really important institution. And I really appreciated the fact that the film, among other things, really, I think, captures the sense of his attitude of humility with which he is undertaking this tremendous responsibility.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. That's actually a quote from Giuliani, who was his mentor, so to speak. But I'm so glad you mentioned it, because it really does kind of encapsulate the way Yannick feels about his role in keeping opera alive and at the highest standard of music, you know, as well. He's very determined to do that, to keep this art form alive.
Hmm. And he seems like one of the young, vibrant musicians who can really play a role in that. I want to ask you about the way the film opens. And so this is even before we hear some of those news announcements that you mentioned, and then this very early sequence where we watch him coaching soprano Diana Damrau in music from La Traviata. The film actually begins with Yannick Nézet-Séguin on the stage of the Met, accepting the delirious applause of the audience. And then after that, rather sort of candid footage as he makes his way back to his office. And then we watch him in his office by himself quietly for a time. It's a really interesting way to start the film, and I like it a lot. But I'm so curious to know what you had in mind in choosing these particular scenes with which to begin the film.
Well, first of all, I want to also just credit my editor, Peter Livingston, because, you know, we work very closely with the editor in terms of determining how we're going to open and close a film. But, you know, I find that the opening of a film is always the most difficult part to do. I mean, some filmmakers like to start at the beginning and go all the way to the end. At the Maisels, we always cut the ending first to see where we were going, always. Always. We always did. And many of us who worked at Maisels, we still do that approach. We don't, you know, whereas I've had to work over my career with, you know, collaborate with filmmakers who want to start right at the beginning and just do the building blocks down. We don't do it that way. We edit differently. But in this situation, we thought that, in a way, since we were focusing on the first year, we wanted to bookend it, you know, in a way. And we thought that, you know, by starting by seeing him at the Met with the famous gold curtains and walking out, you know, and then kind of when he goes back to his dressing room where he's just spent because he's just conducted an opera and he's just sitting there spent, and there's the kind of silence and look on his face, we felt that that gave us an opportunity to kind of go into a title sequence and to do something impressionistic where you see, you don't know quite what you're seeing, but I think it was more cinematic than any other opening that we could come up with, where you see images from Montreal, you see images from the Opera House, and you have the title sequence, and then there he is walking into the Met, you know, and that's when the film begins. So that, I'm glad you like that opening, because it was not an easy one to come up with and craft, and I have to hand it to my wonderful editor Peter Livingston for doing such a beautiful job on it.
It really is a nice way to begin. I mean, I think something about opera is that when we see somebody like a Yannick Nézet-Séguin or a Carian or a Giuliani or a Levine or whoever it might be on that podium, they seem larger than life. And then when they are on the stage and the whole place erupts in a gigantic ovation, again, they seem, you know, almost larger than life, almost superhuman or almost supernatural in a sense in their stature. And then suddenly they're walking down a very nondescript hallway with peeling paint and stuff on the floor. And then they walk into their dressing room and they kind of plop down on the couch. Even someone is young and vibrant and athletic as Yannick Nézet-Séguin, and you realize this is just a human being like you and me. And I think that's one of the things you end up capturing in that juxtaposition of images, is that he's he's just a man, but with some extraordinary talent that has thrust him into this extraordinary position. So,
oh, that's so beautifully said. I'm so glad that you got all of that from those sequences. That's wonderful.
Let's talk for a moment about the aspect of the film that at the outset you maybe didn't even intend to tell, or maybe not to tell in as rich a detail as you ultimately do, and that is the childhood of Yannick Nézet-Séguin. And one of the things that is such a pleasure is for us to meet his mother and father and for us to see marvelous home movies from his earliest years. First of all, as the documentarian, tell us about the experience of kind of seeing some of this for the first time and then having to decide what to use and how to use it.
Well, as we started gathering the archival footage, his parents had told me that they had taken some Super 8 footage. He was born in 1975, and that's kind of what families were still filming in those days. And they had put it on, they had had it somewhere in Montreal put onto a DVD that they were going to send to us. And so when Peter and I looked at it in the edit room, we just thought, oh my gosh, this is going to give us so much material to work with, because you see Yannick from almost the time he was born. Actually, we didn't use the footage. I do have footage of him, like, having his diaper changed the day he comes home. But even in his little car seat, he seems to always be conducting. And so we realized, I mean, there was just, when we interviewed his parents and we heard, you know, what's amazing to me is that he kind of was a child with extraordinary talents. And so, you know, what do you do when you have a child like that? I mean, how do you nurture that talent so that it blossoms, but at the same time, you let this child have a normal upbringing? And I think that how they succeeded in doing that is part of why he's so successful today in terms of being, you know, so kind of open and generous with everybody that he works with. But with that footage, we were able to really kind of watch him grow up. And then one of the most extraordinary things that surprised us was we had kind of heard through the grapevine that the first thing he wanted to be was the Pope. And, you know, he grew up in Montreal as a Catholic, and that seemed kind of understandable. But when his parents told us the story of when the Pope had actually visited Montreal when Yannick was quite young, like I think he was like 8, and then his fascination with drawing Jesus, when we went through this kind of these detailed drawings that he had done from the time he was like 6 to 10 of religious drawings, we realized how profound his religion was, and like his artistic ability just to be able to draw like that as a young child. And that really, really fascinated us. But then once he started singing in the choir in church, he realized that he didn't want to be the Pope. He wanted to be in music. And then almost immediately, what surprised us was how young he was when he realized he wanted to be a conductor. And that was when he was 9 years old, and there's this amazing photograph that's one of my favorite in the film, where you see him in his fourth grade class kind of on a podium. He's standing up, it's a still photograph of him conducting, like, his whole class that's playing what I would call the sympathone, but I guess it's the recorder that they're all playing. And it's the same kind of body language that he has now as an adult conductor. I mean, it's to me my favorite shot in the whole film. But then also, you know, we had this amazing footage of him in his fourth grade talent show conducting to a record, Bolero. And that footage, we were floored by how amazing he is in his conducting. But even more so, he does an introduction. Before he starts conducting, he introduces what he's going to do, and he talks about music. And afterwards, when I saw that footage, I was speaking to his mother, and I said, did you write that introduction for him? And she said, oh, absolutely not. She said, I was as floored as you are when you're watching it. She said, when we went to watch the talent show that morning, and he got up and did that, she said, I was very surprised because I had no idea he had written this introduction. And it's really this idea, he starts it off by saying, ah, music, which I love. Whenever I listen to the radio now, I go, ah, music. And, and he talks about how music can nurture you and must grow within you. It's really pretty amazing that he did that when he was 9 years old.
Absolutely. And although the conducting he does that follows is not textbook conducting in the sense of, you know, he doesn't know what the meter really is, but he knows what a conductor looks like in general, and he throws himself into it with amazing vigor and joy, and it is, you're right, it's an absolutely incredible sequence. Something else I want to be sure we talk about is the presence in this portion of the film, not only of his parents and of all this archival footage, but also the comments of his piano teacher from those years, Anisia Campos. Just say a word about what it was like to speak with this wonderful, venerable teacher.
Well, we, you know, one of the first things that was shot at the Met was when he does a question and answer period in the Met Opera for the Met patrons. And then afterwards he's at a reception, and in the reception one patron asks him, who are your greatest influences? And he said, my mother and father and Madame Campos. So right away we thought, we've got to meet Madame Campos, who is his teacher at the Conservatoire in Montreal. Now, we had been told by many people she's 92 years old, she doesn't do interviews, she never did interviews, and so you're not going to be able to get that interview. She's very frail. But through Yannick's mother helped us, and some of the other students that we got to know who had gone to school with Yannick helped us, and we were able to be able to interview her. We were up in Montreal for a few days filming, and she agreed to let us come by her apartment. She was, when we met her, she's very, very frail. And so I wasn't sure if she could even withstand a filming situation. But the minute she started to speak, she became formidable. And you almost felt like you were a student in her class because she had very strong opinions, as you hear. You know, and but right from the beginning, when she was talking about working with Yannick, she calls him, she explains that, you know, she was, he was the student but with talent, but she was the teacher who guided him. And that, we just love that whole approach, and her whole concept that talent is an accident, that you have to really work very hard to be able to, you know, to really be able to realize it. It's nothing that's given to you. It's all hard work. And this whole, the whole way that she talks about how she was trying to build his character, even through the notes he played, I mean, that discipline, you see to this day, he still constantly refers back to Madame Campos, just like he does with Giulini. I mean, those are the two names that he talks about all the time in terms of how he became who he is. And it, the saddest thing is that she passed away right before we finished the film, so she never got to see the film, which was really a disappointment for all of us. But
it makes it even more precious, her contribution. That is, we feel even more grateful that you were able to secure these insightful comments that really only she would be in a position to make about young Yannick and these formative years. Your film does a lovely job of following us through his expanding career. I mean, and some of the opportunities that came to him at a very tender young age, and it is wonderful to see the emergence of this superlative musician over the years. We also meet Yannick Nézet-Séguin on a more personal level, and in particular, we hear from his life partner, who is also a very fine musician, and he is one of the only people that in which we have kind of the so-called talking head kind of offering thought and reflection on Yannick, who, of course, means so much to him. Can you just tell us a little bit about his, that is, Pierre's contribution to the film?
Right. We always actually had planned to even film more of Yannick and Pierre, and that's one of the casualties of the COVID quarantine, you know, that we didn't ever get to go back to Montreal. But, Yannick and Pierre met when they were around 7, I think even younger, probably around 15 or 16, when they both went to the Conservatoire in Montreal, which is one of the leading musical schools in Canada. And Pierre is a violist, and at one point, you know, Yannick was living with his parents through that time, but I guess around 19 or 20, Yannick wanted to move out of his house, and he just mentioned to Pierre and Pierre's best friend, who was a woman named Stephanie Pothier, if he had heard that they had a extra room, you know, in their apartment. And they said, sure. They didn't really know him, but they said, sure, we'd love to have you. And so he moved in, and then he and Pierre, I guess you could say, fell in love, and the rest is history, so to speak. But what's interesting about their relationship is that that they talk about music all day long. You know, like after every rehearsal, Pierre would like call Yannick, because Pierre is a member of the Orchestra Metropolitan in Montreal, so he can't always be with Yannick when Yannick's on the road or when he's in New York. But despite that, they talk many times during the day, and they always, like, they'll talk in detail about how did the rehearsal go, how did this play, how did that play, you know. And so in Pierre, Yannick has a great sounding board, somebody who is so knowledgeable about music and also about what Yannick's goals are in how he wants to interpret music, that it's a fantastic relationship that they have in that way. And, you know, the story of which we include in the film of when Yannick was in around 25, when he decided he wanted to really become an international conductor as well. And he started going to Europe and all of a sudden was conducting beginning to conduct with some of the greatest orchestras at that time in the world, and how terrifying it was on some level, how his anxiety grew, and the fact that Pierre was there with him helped him to get through those difficult moments. As his parents ended up traveling with him a lot through Europe too, just to give him kind of support. And of course, Yannick always fell back on his studying, you know, just he studies countless hours even to this day. But Pierre, all through, you know, from the time they were like 18, 19, they've been together, and it's quite a beautiful relationship to see the way they respect each other and how important Pierre is to Yannick.
I really do love that relationship. One interesting story is when they attend the Met in 1999, and Pierre tells Yannick after that performance, "I picture you being here someday." And 10 years later, Yannick is conducting at the Met, and another 10 years goes by, and he is the artistic director of that opera house. So Pierre saw that coming. A last question. One thing that I like about the way this film is constructed is it is not chronological. It does not begin with his childhood and end with the season-ending dialogues of the Carmelites, but jumps back and forth between those early years and his mature years as a conductor. Can you just say a word about the crafting of the film in terms of blending past and present in the way that you do? I'm sure it wasn't easy to achieve this lovely balance.
Well, it never is. You know, the structuring, especially of a documentary when you aren't working from a script, is very difficult. And our approach right from the beginning is to look at the footage. We try to look at the footage more than once. It's a luxury to do that. And then you really talk it out, like what scenes stand out to you? What do you think is the best material? And you start cutting sequences that way. And then you start to put them in an assembly, and eventually you keep working very hard fine-tuning the structure. But in this situation, too, we wanted to combine, you know, the great archival material we had, and also, you know, to start understanding that even when Yannick was 20 years old, he started his own ensemble in Montreal that played Baroque music. And in doing that, he had to deal with orchestra members. He had to deal with board of directors. He already was having the beginnings of understanding how to be a music director for something as large as the Met that he would have many years later. And so we wanted to kind of weave his actual history with, of course, the great music that we were filming him perform at the Met Opera. And, you know, and these films, in many ways, about conductors, the music is almost like a character, you know. I mean, because so they keep the momentum of the film going. So we had the beautiful music of La Traviata, including even Sempre Libre, you know, one of the greatest arias in all of opera. We get to hear a little of that. And then when he's in Montreal, we hear through a lot of his history, but also in performance as well, Bruckner's Fourth Symphony, which is just an amazing. It was a symphony I wasn't that familiar with. It's just, to me, one of the great pieces of music ever. And so, you know, it was a balance of finding out how to tell the story and also keep the music alive, because that's what a music director is all about, and that's what he's doing at the Met Opera, is keeping opera alive. And but also he's, you know, the conductor of two great orchestras. And we were so lucky in this telling the story, you know, when he was in Philadelphia, he was working on the final ending of one of the most famous symphonies, Mahler's Ninth Symphony.
Yes.
And that really, you know, that the aspect of how that music, you know, Mahler is, you know, it's some of the last notes that Mahler wrote, you know, and it's quite beautiful to see what Yannick does with it. So we felt that it was just, it's trial and error to a large degree to see what starts to work. And whenever there's a portal in, like, Yannick's life where we could kind of go to music, you know, like after he does the Bolero piece, we then cut to him rehearsing La Traviata with the Met Orchestra. You know, it seemed like a natural way to interweave, you know, the past and the present. And so we took advantage of any time we had that kind of opportunity, we took it.
And, of course, that's really the story of the film, is that who he is inexorably tied to who he was growing up. And that youngster in that fourth grade classroom, that's the same person. But everything he has experienced since then has helped shape him into the extraordinary musician that he is. And the force of nature that he is on the podium at the Met and in places around the world. The film is just beautiful, again titled Yannick, An Artist's Journey. It can be seen in movie theaters all over the country tomorrow afternoon and tomorrow evening. Theaters like the Majestic Cinema in Brookfield, the AMC Mayfield Mall in Wauwatosa, Vernon Hills, Northbrook, Tinseltown in Kenosha, 1 o'clock showing and 6:30 in the evening. Yannick, An Artist's Journey. And responsible for this film, Susan Fromke. Susan Fromke, what a great pleasure, first of all, to see yet another beautiful opera film from you and to be able to talk with you about it on the morning show. Thank you so much and best wishes.
Same to you. Thank you.
Because of time constraints, we had to leave off just a little bit of this interview that you just heard. To hear the interview in its absolute entirety, you should seek out the podcast version of The Morning Show. Look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg. It's available on all major podcast providers, including Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, Linda Guy joins us from the Four Seasons Garden Club to talk about their secret garden walk, which is coming up this weekend. On Thursday, trumpeter Tim Burke, a brilliantly talented musician born and raised in Racine, who played with Stan Kenton and Woody Herman, and then has played for a number of major musicals in the city of Chicago. He's coming back to his hometown to perform with the Racine Concert Band Sunday evening, July 11th in the Racine Zoo. And you can hear my conversation with him on Thursday. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, where students can conduct NASA research, produce an original play, or join an in-house marketing agency as early as their freshman year. More information on all that Carthage offers is available at carthage.edu. We're approaching 9 o'clock.